This is Brian Lehr's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, April 11th. I'm Bridget Bergen, senior reporter in the WNYC and Gothamist newsroom, filling in for Brian today. House Speaker Mike Johnson is less than 5 months into his tenure. The Louisiana Republican was the party's fourth choice after they ousted Kevin McCarthy, and he's faced no shortage of challenges trying to corral his own members and lead the House through a series of issues. Aid to Ukraine, funding to keep the government from shutting down, and just yesterday, a stalemate over renewing a warrantless surveillance law that intelligence officials say is essential to their ability to prevent terror attacks on the U.S. At this point, Johnson is facing a backlash from far-right members of his own party who say he's giving too much ground to President Biden and the Democrats. Joining us now to unpack the latest from the Capitol is Luke Broadwater, who covers Congress for the New York Times with a focus on investigations. Luke, welcome back to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Luke, I want to zoom out to start and just remind our listeners who we're talking about here. Who is Mike Johnson? Where does he come from? How did he become the compromise speaker way back last October?
Sure. Well, Mike Johnson was a rank and file congressman from Louisiana. Nobody, if you had asked a year ago, nobody would have envisioned him becoming the speaker. But amid the chaos and the carousel of candidates that House Republicans trotted out after they ousted Kevin McCarthy, who was the speaker, a tired and beleaguered group finally settled on Mike Johnson, who was seen as a consensus candidate. He was considered very conservative, a Christian from the Christian conservative wing of the party, a man of faith, and he was conservative enough for the right wing, and he was establishment enough for the establishment. So they settled on Mike Johnson, thinking everyone had found somebody that was unobjectionable. The rub here has been that the rank and file Mike Johnson was a lot different than Speaker Mike Johnson. Once he became Speaker, Mike Johnson changed his position on a bunch of issues. He says that's because he has a different role now, and also because he learned a lot more about the issues. Now he has access to classified briefings and information he didn't once have when he was a rank and file Republican. And so he says he's more informed now on some of these issues, and that's to account for his change of position. But what's happened is that the right wing, which supported Johnson initially, is beginning to turn on him in increasing numbers.
And Luke, how soon would you say, since, you know, it took all that time to coalesce around Johnson and make him this compromise candidate, how soon after taking the role did he start to face threats from his own members that they might challenge him in this leadership post?
Well, his honeymoon has been brief. I expected him to have a longer honeymoon, but I would say within a few weeks, people started to become dissatisfied with Johnson.
Wow.
And the dissatisfaction has sort of reached a head recently when Marjorie Taylor Greene, a ultra-conservative member from Georgia, introduced a motion to vacate. She has not called the vote on that motion. The motion to vacate is a rule that was agreed to under the previous speaker, under which any one member can essentially call for a snap vote to remove the speaker. She has introduced it, but she has not called for the vote yet. She has that hanging over Mike Johnson's head as a leverage point against him.
And Luke, we're going to talk a little bit more about that later in our conversation. But Luke, I want to start diving into some of the many controversies Johnson has had to face. One recently is over aid to Ukraine. As you mentioned, he's changed positions since he was a rank and file member. At that point, he had opposed additional funding for Ukraine, but he's come to a new position as of late. How has he been persuaded, and who has persuaded him?
Right. Well, you're correct. Mike Johnson initially was part of what I would say is the kind of the more isolationist wing of the party when he was a rank and file member. He had voted twice against Ukraine aid. He says that's because there wasn't enough oversight of the aid. But since becoming speaker, he's been privy to, in his words, more information. One thing that happened right away was the sort of chairman of Armed Services and Foreign Affairs and the committees that deal with Ukraine directly had a meeting with him, sort of stressed the need for this money, how important it was to stop the march of Vladimir Putin into Europe. And also, obviously, he had more information from the intelligence community, from military leaders. And so he's come around on this, and he's been telling people that he will eventually pass Ukraine aid, but he's been putting it off until he accomplishes other priorities. This has angered the far right, who want aid to Ukraine to stop. They don't want any more money spent in Ukraine. They want money spent only domestically, and so it does imperil his speakership. What may happen, I don't know if this will happen, but it may, is that if he does move to pass Ukraine aid and the hard right attempts to oust him over it, Democrats have said that that would be a condition under which they would step in to save his speakership. But they want to see him actually do it first. He can't just talk about it. So, yes, he has had a change of position on Ukraine aid, and we'll see whether or not he follows through with it.
Some of your colleagues reported that Johnson has been talking up elements of a possible aid deal. One involved using seized assets of Russian oligarchs to pay for that aid. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what Johnson is doing here is he's trying to get Republicans to yes, or at least to not be so angry about Ukraine aid. So a number of the things he has floated is one, yes, using these seized assets to send as the funding for Ukraine aid. Another thing is potentially having the aid be converted into a loan so Ukraine would have to pay it back eventually. There's also been a talk about cuts elsewhere in the budget to offset the Ukraine aid. So he's trying to give the hard right something where maybe they won't vote for it, but at least they won't try to throw him out of office over it. So, and oftentimes congressional negotiations are like this. If you can give somebody something to mollify them, maybe they don't embrace your plan, but they're not as outraged over it. So that's one of the suggestions he's put forward. It's all very tentative and tenuous right now. And he has said that he wants to get the foreign intelligence bill reauthorized first before he even tries to do Ukraine, because the Ukraine issue angers the Republican base more than almost any other. And so he knows that supporting Ukraine will fire up his hard right members. And so that's why he's putting it off till last.
That's interesting. We're going to talk more about that foreign intelligence bill in just a moment. Just the other piece of that Ukraine aid proposal that he's talked up, which may not be moving quite as quickly, is related to trying to change the Biden administration's energy policy, as I understand, specifically as it relates to exporting liquefied natural gas. Again, it sounds like another proposal meant to appeal to other Republican members. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, Republicans want to see more domestic energy production. That's something that's very popular with the rank and file members. And so, again, here, this is another effort to give the right something where they can say, oh, look, we gave up the Ukraine aid, but in exchange, we now are going to see more LNG production. I think it also helps that this would benefit Louisiana, Speaker Johnson's home state. And it would be, sort of an American first policy where we're producing the energy here, even if there are environmental concerns about it.
I understand that the Ukraine aid is among the issues that has angered far-right Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia the most. She cites it in her criticism of Johnson. We talked a little bit about that at the top. As you mentioned, she submitted that resolution last month calling for his removal. hasn't called for a vote on it yet. But just to be clear, what initially prompted her to introduce that resolution last month?
She has been, according to her, she's been angry about a number of things, and her anger has built over time. The impetus, I think the thing she said pushed her over the edge was was passing essentially the spending bills for the year. She didn't believe there were deep enough cuts in them. She said the spending was above the previous Congress when Nancy Pelosi was in charge. Of course, spending typically grows every year because of inflation and things cost more every year. Her central argument was about spending. And she also wanted deep cuts to law enforcement, to the Justice Department, to the intelligence community, because she said those have been weaponized against Donald Trump and Republicans. Those cuts were not included in any of the spending plans. You know, there's a lot of Republicans who still support law enforcement and support law and order and don't believe that they've been weaponized. So she was angry about a number of issues, but it was the spending bills that pushed her over the edge.
Well, here's a little clip of Speaker Johnson commenting on Congresswoman Green in a press conference just yesterday.
Marjorie and I don't disagree, I don't think, on any matter of philosophy. We're both conservatives, you know, but we do disagree sometimes on strategy and with regard to what we put on the floor and when and those things. Marjorie is frustrated by the last appropriations package, the spending bills, and you know what? So am I. I mean, here's the reality that we have to remind everybody, and you all know in the room because you're here every day, but some people back home don't realize, we have the smallest majority in U.S. history. We've got a one-vote margin right now.
We've talked, Luke, about how Republicans hold this razor-thin majority in the House. Can you talk about how and why their majority has shrunk so much since Johnson took office? And given how narrow it is, how much traction you think this letter that Green is circulating will actually get?
Yes. Well, the short answer is Republicans keep quitting Congress. I mean, people are very dissatisfied with the chaos in Congress. They came to many Republicans came to Capitol Hill to try to get things done, to try to pass legislation that could improve their communities. And instead, they encounter chaos, dysfunction, grandstanding, showmanship over work. I mean, the list of complaints is so long when you talk to members of Congress. And so when other opportunities present themselves, some of them are jumping midterm. There was also the incident in which George Santos was exposed as a fabulist and was voted out by his own Republicans, voted out of Congress. And then, of course, the special election was won by a Democrat. So that cost them a seat as well. And their numbers keep dwindling and dwindling. And you know what? Someone once told me when this Congress started that don't be surprised if the Democrats have the majority by the end of it. And I thought that sounded crazy at the time. But so many people have quit that who knows?
Wow.
It is, the numbers keep shrinking, and that does, in fact, imperil the speakership of Mike Johnson.
Luke, just before we move on from the Ukraine issue in this context, I just want to share a couple of texts that listeners sent in. The first listener writes, "Don't the Republicans realize that Ukraine aid is not sending money to Ukraine, but sending money to American arms manufacturers? So supporting local U.S. economies and workers as we send Ukraine the arms, win-win." Perhaps being slightly tongue-in-cheek there.
No, that's exactly right. The bulk of the money actually goes to places like Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin to build weapons for Ukraine. The writer is exactly right. The money really goes to American companies who then send the weapons to Ukraine.
And another listener notes, "Johnson has not changed position on Ukraine until he makes a decision that we can see. Dems should make a deal to vote to retain him as speaker in exchange for a vote on Ukraine now." That seems to be part of this conversation, right?
Yes. But the politics of this are so tricky because Any Republican who sides with Democrats or deals with Democrats almost immediately becomes toxic to his own party. So if he is seen as overtly working with Democrats to save his speakership, he will become a pariah almost instantly. So it has to almost be something that Johnson does on his own, and then Democrats step in independently to save them. And he almost has to act like he doesn't want it or like that. He doesn't want to work with them. So that's the weird toxic politics of the Hill. But, you know, I was talking with Abigail Spanberger, who's sort of a centrist Democrat from Virginia, the other day. And she said, if they try to kick him out over Ukraine, I will offer a motion to table that. And and we have the votes in the middle among the Democrats to save him.
Wow.
But I want to see that he is actually doing it and is not just talk. So that's the key to it. There's really no trust between the parties in the House, and that adds to the problems.
You wrote a piece recently, Luke, that was really fascinating, that speak to some of these challenging personalities within the Republican House Conference. You profiled GOP Representative Clay Higgins, also of Louisiana, who has publicly been sharing debunked conspiracy theories about January 6th. And instead of pushing him to the fringes of the party, House leaders made him chair of the subcommittee overseeing border enforcement. Can you tell us a bit about what Higgins has been saying and how those theories are false?
Sure. There's a number of extreme Republicans in Congress. And from time to time, it's worth to fact check them and debunk some of the things they are saying. Clay Higgins has been promoting the idea that January 6th was an inside job, that there were agent provocateurs sent by the FBI in ghost buses to, pull off the January 6th attack on the Capitol. He does not claim there wasn't violence. He does not claim it didn't happen. He just claims that the federal government set everyone up. And there's really no evidence to support any of this. He said they're going to release all this video from inside the Capitol. I've seen all this video. All the defense attorneys across the country have seen all this video. There's nobody in there who is, FBI doing an inside job. But he continues to make these claims, and frankly, they're not unique. President Trump has embraced the January 6th defendants. He's recorded a song with them. He has cast them as hostages, political prisoners. These are people, for the most part, who attacked police, who were very violent on that day. And so Clay Higgins and others have joined this attempt to rewrite history, that January 6th was something like an honorable day where, good Americans were set up by an evil deep state. And there's just no evidence to support that.
And Luke, what does it tell you about Johnson's leadership or the leadership challenges he faces that he would elevate Higgins to this subcommittee chairmanship?
Well, it's tough. Speaker Johnson has to deal with a varied and fractious caucus. And I will note that he inherited a bunch of positions that Kevin McCarthy had set up. But what Speaker Johnson did do was appoint Clay Higgins to be one of the impeachment managers against Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary. And if you look at the impeachment managers that he appointed, they include Marjorie Taylor Greene. They include Andy Biggs, who's a prominent election denier in Congress. And so he could have appointed a team of former federal prosecutors or, some of the people who are seen as establishment or serious politicians. And instead, he appointed sort of a wide range of people, including some people who believe in conspiracy theories. I think he's trying to make all different parts of his conference happy, but it shows you the type of things that people are willing to do to try to stay in power.
For our listeners who maybe did not hear me say former clearly. Obviously, we know that President Trump is former President Trump, as we've talked about his role in this Congress. But just put a fine point on that for those of you who have texted us to make sure that we understand that. I gotcha. I want to ask you before we let you go, Luke, another question that a listener texted in. What scenario could bring Hakeem Jeffries to the speakership if Johnson is voted out? And is that something that congressional members are even considering in this current Congress?
So at the beginning of this Congress, I would have said there's a 0% chance of that happening. Now I think it's something less than non-zero. If Speaker Johnson is kicked out and Republicans cannot choose a successor because they're too divided, is there a chance where there's a handful of perhaps retiring members of Congress who are Republican who would vote for Jeffries just to see the place function for the final 6 months of the year? I think that there is a chance of that. I think it's a small chance. It's a remote chance. But should Speaker Johnson get kicked out, all it would take is a handful of Republicans to vote for Jeffries along with all the Democrats just to see the place run. That would be a political career killer for those Republicans. So they would almost certainly need to be people who are retiring. Hmm.
And Luke, my last question is, you know, so much of our conversation today has been about the obstacles Speaker Johnson has faced so far. But this is obviously a hugely consequential election year. Are there legislative victories that he points to and that he hopes his members will use in their reelection campaigns?
It's hard to see what those could be. They did pass the appropriations bill, so he could say he kept the government running and he prevented a shutdown. For the most part, all Republicans can really do on their own is pass messaging bills. Obviously, the Senate is run by Democrats and President Biden is a Democrat. And so if they want to get anything done, they have to work with Democrats. And right now, there's just too many Republicans who don't want to do that. They could perhaps point to some accomplishments from the last Congress when there were, you know, a bipartisan infrastructure bill. They could take credit if they voted for that, for the projects coming to their districts. There was reform on the Electoral Count Act. There were a number of reforms that have happened that were bipartisan in nature, but not all the Republicans voted for them. So really, if there have been any wins, it's been the more moderate members of the two parties that have gotten them done. We haven't seen successes from the right wing. Hmm.
Well, we're going to leave it there for now. My guest has been New York Times congressional reporter Luke Broadwater. Luke, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.